This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team is on the way back. A college World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
You know, yesterday, of course, we did a lot of the reaction to the tragic passing of Kobe Bryant and just our quick reactions to that. And it's amazing that when you have a story like this, to see how many people from all different walks of life be able to have a Kobe story or have some sort of reaction to what he meant to them. And it's no different with head coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks, Eric Musselman, who, of course, we know he coached in the NBA, coached in the D League. He's had a huge and long coaching background in all different leagues. And it was really interesting to hear what he had to say when he was asked about what he thought about Kobe Bryant and some thoughts and some sharing of his stories. Now, it's in a kind of an extended clip. It's about 3 minutes, so bear with us. But it's a great story that Eric Musselman talked about. And I think it was really great to hear his reflection and his reaction to the passing of Kobe Bryant. Take a listen.
You know, yesterday, you know, it was obviously shocking to everybody. As I've looked back, at, you know, the time that I was a NBA head coach and also an NBA assistant. And my sons talked about it. I talked to both of them yesterday on a like we were all three on the on a call together because Matthew was heading back to San Diego from the Bay Area. And both my sons have autographed jerseys to them in their rooms in the Bay Area. Obviously, Michael put a picture out when I was an assistant with the Grizzlies. Kobe was really unique. Right before that picture with Michael, one of the other Grizzlies assistants had asked for something from Kobe, and he said no. For whatever reason, because that was prior to me coaching the Lakers D-League team, he just kind of, when he respected you, he communicated with you, and you know, I asked him one night for a pair of his shoes, and I said, "Hey, can you sign one for one son, and can you sign the other for the other?" There's not a lot of NBA superstars that would take the time to sign one shoe to one son and one to another. They'd just sign them, or a lot of guys wouldn't even give you the shoe and say, "No, I need him for tomorrow night or whatever." And that was as an opposing coach, and the very first game that I ever coached was in Hawaii. And it was an exhibition game. I looked across the way, and it was Kobe, Shaq, Gary Payton, Karl Malone. You know, so I have some vivid memories. I don't remember what year, but one of the years when I was with the Warriors in the first quarter, we shaded Kobe to his right. In the second quarter, we shaded him to the left, and we had worked on that for the 2 days prior that we were going to mix up each quarter which way we shaded him and where all the help was going to be. And right before the second half started, he came over, and you know, I didn't think that he would know what we were really doing, and he looked at me and he said, "Coach Musk, what are you going to do this third quarter? Play me straight up?" And he said, "Good luck with that." And you know, those were, you know, just some things that I've experienced with him. And then when I was coaching the Lakers D-League team, it was after a game, and I had stayed doing a post-game report. I was the last one out of the building other than the security guard at the Lakers D-League facility. And I came out. There was a car about four spots away from mine. It was Kobe's car. He rolled the window down and said, "Coach, is anybody else in there?" And I said, "You know, I'm the last one other than the security guard." And he said, "Okay, great." He got out of his car, and I asked him, you know, why. And he wanted to go shoot in there and didn't want anybody in there, including me. Just, you know, a unique competitor that had an incredible work ethic.
You know, when you hear Coach Musselman say it, and especially somebody like him who's been around a long time, and he tells his own unique story of Kobe Bryant, I mean, there's a lot to break down there. But I think that the first part that he talks about, and just how, you know, he signed those shoes for his kid, and each kid got a shoe from Kobe Bryant, and you know, it's just things like that and the work ethic that he had. And then the fact that it was almost just such a BA moment where he, you know, Eric Musselman, who's a phenomenal coach and is a great X's and O's coach and likes to have a defensive mind and be able to make schemes and stop guys and slow guys down. When he was going through, Tommy, those things that he was trying to do to slow down Kobe, and then he made the adjustments, all that, I'm sure that Eric Musselman was like, all right, we're doing good, we know what we're doing. And then Kobe just walks over and is like, all right, so what are you going to do now to me?
Yeah.
All right, well, so yeah, good luck with that and see what happens. I mean, that's just, it again, shows the greatness of Kobe Bryant, not only on the court, but also adding into his work ethic. I mean, it's just, it's awesome to hear stories like that, especially from somebody who's now coaching at the University of Arkansas.
Yeah, and, you know, rare is the coach in college basketball that can speak about so many of these NBA superstars because they've been around them. They either coached them or competed against them. And that's why Eric Musselman's track is so unique. But when I heard that yesterday, listening back to his press conference, I thought, what a unique perspective that none of us can offer up. I mean, most of us that are doing this job here can only offer up our, you know, observations of Kobe from afar because we watched him on TV. We understood the kind of star he was, you know, on and on and on. It's a guy that can, you know, coached in that same organization with him, but also coached teams against him. And I just thought it was a unique perspective that Eric Musselman provided yesterday.
Oh, yeah, because I always like to hear what coaches' stories and coaches' experiences always fascinate me. And maybe I'm one of the few people who find those things fascinating. Because it's, listen, if Eric Musselman sat up there and talked about, you know, plays and X's and O's, I'd be curious. But it's just because I don't know anything about that stuff. I don't know about, you know what you do when this particular player comes down here and all that. Like, that's pretty interesting to me, too. But to just hear, you know, coaches and then they reflect on some of the great stories and the great moments that they've had. And in this case, with Eric Musselman talking about his time with Kobe Bryant, even though it wasn't anything over the top crazy, it wasn't anything that was just like, you know, he got to see day in and day out the daily life of Kobe Bryant. It was just those small little moments that stuck out and really showed exactly who Kobe Bryant was. I mean, like Kobe Bryant, like we talked about when he came up and said, what are you going to do now, coach? I mean, that was Kobe. Like that was a Kobe moment that I know Eric Musselman especially will probably treasure and really remember for the rest of his life because of just who Kobe Bryant was. And so I love to hear coaches who have experience with big-time players or big-time games, big-time moments. And that's another thing that's really special about Eric Musselman, Tommy, is that he has been around and coaching for so long. And in so many different leagues and has had so many different players. He's coached NBA players. He's also coached potential NBA players in the D leagues. He's probably coached some guys that got drafted out of college basketball at his stops. I mean, he has been around so much. And I think that that's also just another great and awesome thing that you can be proud of if you're a Razorback fan, knowing that your basketball coach has as much of experience and as much of a story to tell than any other coach, and he's been around, and I don't think there's anything that he will see on the basketball court that'll be too much for him to handle or for him to understand just because of those experiences he's had.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that makes him special and unique and able to attract recruits here to the University of Arkansas, and I think that's why we're all very hopeful that the future is very bright with that program under his leadership. I think people are as excited right now as they have been. You know, how early on, I mean, I don't think there's been a coach in my lifetime in basketball you've been this excited about in year one. It's probably the first thing you could point to would be Houston Nutt in year one with him. I think maybe there was some excitement with Petrino because of the resume he brought. Mm-hmm. But there hadn't been many that, you know, even with Nolan, people the first couple of years were a little, you know, wondering if this was going to work out. And obviously by 1990, it did. As he got, you know, that 89-90 team to the Final Four in Denver. You know, you look at some of the other football coaches, people got excited about Houston Nutt in 98 because of the early success. I think people were excited from the jump about Petrino. I'm just trying to think through it. This guy's created excitement from basically nothing by his presence and winning games in year one. And I think part of it's because he has this perspective where, you know, he spent about half of his coaching career in or maybe more than half in professional basketball, And then he spent another half or so in collegiate basketball. And he's just a well-rounded coach from his experience.
Yeah, and that's where it's like I try to, I guess, temper my excitement just a little bit about Eric Musselman, because I want to be all in, and I think that he's done everything right. But it's also, you know, there's always this element, I guess it's maybe this the jaded Razorback fan in me, where I don't really necessarily feel like, okay, this is going to work. This is going to be 100% what I expect it to be, because it never seems to be when it comes to being a Razorback fan. Mm-hmm. It never seems to be that case. But if you just look at what Eric Musselman has done in just the 19 games he's been head coach, which, again, this is not saying that he has been perfect, because he has, you know, he's lost four games. There's been some moments where, you know, they've had some flaws here and there. So it's not perfection, and no one's expecting that either. But what he has done, not only on the court itself and making these adjustments with these players, not only what he has done in his branding and in his marketing and in his social media and his energy and passion of getting the fans to get fired up about this program, not only is it about the recruiting and the class that he's going to be bringing in 2020, which arguably might be one of the best classes Arkansas has had in two decades. I mean, it could be to that point. He is doing everything right. And you just really feel like, at least I do, that Eric Musselman may have awoken a sleeping giant that's been asleep for quite some time. Because, listen, Arkansas has been competitive. They were competitive under Mike Anderson. They were even competitive under Stan Heath. But to get to the point to where this could be above competitive, this could has the potential to be to where Arkansas was back in the 90s. Not saying they're going to win a national championship under Eric Musselman, because that's so difficult to do. But I truly believe that they have a guy that is good enough to compete, to go to the Elite Eight and to the Final Four and make the tournament every single year. I think that they have that type of coach.
If you're good enough to get to the Elite Eight and the Final Four, you're good enough to win a national title.
Yeah.
Maybe not every year. And listen, no program's going to win it every year. But if he could go to the Final Four once a decade, twice a decade, people, they'll be building statues, you know. And right now, we're on a drought of since 96, they haven't been to the Sweet 16. Let's take baby steps. You know, let's forget about even the term Final Four, other than where we're going to watch it at. Let's just worry about getting to the tournament consistently, getting past the first weekend, and winning a couple of games in the tournament in the same year, and then see what happens from there. Because that's something Arkansas hasn't been able to do. If this coach could simply get you back to that second weekend and prove, hey, this is once again a top 20 basketball program in America, and there's no argument about that, it's a success.
Oh, without question. I mean, you have a setup right now, and you have a program that is built for that success. It's built for it. It's just a matter of getting the right guy as coach and the right players in place. And I think Arkansas is a destination for coaches, and I think it's a destination for players, Tommy. It's a destination where players, like players especially when they get to Arkansas and they see what they are, they don't look at Arkansas as being like, well, that's kind of a lower-tier program. I'll only go there if Kentucky doesn't offer me or Kansas. It's not that type of program. It's a program to where you can show the successes and the accolades and what this program has been. And with the way Eric Musselman can bring in his NBA experience as well as his assistant coaches, those are the small things that can just really resonate with kids these days to where, you know what, yeah, you can get some good players, but you can also get those Malik Monk-type players, which are, I know, once-in-a-generation talents or even a Corliss Williamson. But I'm telling you right now, Tommy, if Arkansas here in the next 5 or so years has a guy to that caliber come about in the state, I feel fully confident that Eric Musselman will be able to land him, and even if he's not, you know, all in on Arkansas, he can give him the recruiting pitches that he needs to land him. And honestly, that has been the biggest difference of Arkansas really taking that next step over the past 10 or 15 years, is not being able to get that once in a generation type of player, or at least the players that could make a difference in your own home state to bring you to that next level, possibly even making the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight.
Morning Rush, brought to you in part by World of Wireless, 877-305-DISH. That's 877-305-3474. You can still lock in your price for 2 years. If you're not satisfied with the service you have heading into Super Bowl weekend, call WOW now. They can have high def in every room, whole home DVR. And if you have 4K TVs but you don't have 4K service, World of Wireless can get you 4K service in every room. 877-305-3474. Be installed before this weekend to watch the big game with World of Wireless. 877-305-DISH.
But it's cool, too, Tommy, because you know that Razorback fans, as we were talking about in the first segment, I know we'll bring it back up, but just, you know, this is a program that has been wanting something to be excited about. And it just makes me wonder, because I got in a conversation with a buddy of mine who actually covers Kentucky basketball, and he was asking me, and he was legitimately curious. He's like, if Arkansas is a basketball school, right? Like, it's basketball first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, I mean, if you polled the fan base, I think that if you said if you could win a championship in football, basketball, or baseball, which one would they choose? They'd all choose football every single time. And he was just confused because he's like, man, that looks like a basketball school to me. The energy, the passion of the fan base, the amount of fans, the excitement that they have for basketball, it looks like a basketball school to me. And that's coming from a Kentucky fan, yeah, or a Kentucky guy who covers Kentucky. And I'm kind of struggling there because I'm like, but it's not a basketball school. But at the same time, it's a really good football school that loves its basketball. Try to make sense out of it all.
Well, I think it's gone through phases and eras. I think it also depends on your age. If you were one that grew up and you remember the greatness of the 60s and the 70s and winning back-to-back Southwest Conference titles, 88 and 89. If you remember those things, you know, you're probably more of a football person. If you're born more in your generation, John, where you don't remember a lot of those things. You probably don't remember Quinn. Well, I know you don't remember Quinn Grovey playing. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't remember Lou Holtz and Ken Hatfield eras and certainly Frank Broyles and what he did, you know, you grew up seeing the success in your formative years of Nolan Richardson and the basketball program. And you haven't seen you've seen very limited success in football if you're 35 and under, 30 and under. So I think some of that determining what kind of school you think someone is, your perspective, I think has a lot to do with your age based on what you got to grow up, what influenced you as a teenager or younger, under the age of 10 when you started to really understand sports. You know, football's just not since they've joined the Southeastern Conference, there's been brief periods. But there's just, you know, there obviously hadn't been a conference title. So I think it's made basketball and certainly baseball a little more front and center for most fans under that certain age mark.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think that let's be honest, too, Tommy. People like to be interested and be good in sports that are relevant to the masses. They like to be good in sports that people will pay attention to. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people pay attention to college basketball in the regular season really that much. I mean, they may for the big games. But what they do pay attention to, and everybody pays attention to, is the NCAA tournament.
Yep.
Like, everybody pays attention to that. So if you win it and win it all, everyone knows who you are. Everyone has heard of you because everyone was watching it because they all enjoy the NCAA tournament. Same thing with football. People want to be relevant in football first and foremost. Yeah, because it's the most fun sport and people enjoy it the most and all that. But it's also because it's the most relevant sport among the masses. If you win a national championship in college football, everyone across the country is going to know who you are, where you're from, the players you have, the coach you have, everything. I mean, just look at LSU and Eddie O. I mean, they're still getting talked about. They're still having social media put up about them. They're still doing interviews and whatnot because if you're relevant in something that everyone cares about, it gives you that much more pride when you're good at it because then you feel like you're among the elites. You can talk trash to all the other people that, you know, they think that they're above you right now. Well, if you get back to being a championship caliber team, then you're the ones that can be in the driver's seat of feeling that pride instead of having to hold your head in shame like you had the past few years. There's just something about being good in a sport that everyone cares about that adds that little extra element of pride. And that's nothing against some of the smaller sports. But, you know, I not to make fun of it, but it's like, you know, I always like to say, well, you know what? If you make fun of me for my football program, yeah, well, at least we're better at track than you. You know, but it just doesn't resonate as much as then when you say, well, no, we're better at football than you. It's just the way it is in this day and age in college sports.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it will be interesting to see, you know, I think we just go through it. I mean, baseball this year, you know, I'm looking at this baseball team. I got my Hogs Illustrated baseball preview sitting over here. Is this the year? I think that's where a lot of fans are. I know we're on the doorstep of baseball starting in a couple of weeks, but I think we're all anticipating. Is this the year? Because I think – with most fans. We've talked a lot about basketball versus football, but you got to throw baseball in there too, because are we on the doorstep of a national championship? Is the magic combination finally going to roll into place here for Dave Van Horn? You know, that's on my mind right now, because I see a talented enough team to not just make another run at Omaha, but make a run in Omaha. So, you know, I don't know that, you know, is baseball big enough that anyone's a baseball school that's a Power Five, or certainly an SEC school? I don't know, but that's on my mind right now, John. Is this the year? Because I believe at some point in my lifetime, in the near future, they're going to win a national championship in baseball. Is this the year? You know, that's what I anticipate.
Yeah. I mean, they have all the pieces for it, because, you know, we go back to what we were talking about with basketball and being set up for it. Baseball, 100% is set up for it.
Yeah.
They got the coach. They've been getting the players. They've been getting the high-level players. Now it's just about executing down the stretch, and we all know they were a foul ball away from doing it, but still, it just shows you that all it takes is they have everything else. Now it's just about executing it is all it takes.
Yeah. So, fun conversation. I think the one thing, though, that, you know, we had someone text in from the 479 says we were Razorback fans. That's really it at the end of the day. There is no professional team. We've all heard the spiel before. It's the tie that binds us all, but it's true. You know, from one end of the state to the other, the Razorbacks are the pro team here. It is our focus. And I think, you know, depending on the success or the ups and the downs of a particular sport, that's kind of where we gravitate to.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of schools that are like that. You know, there's not a lot of schools that where they're the main school in the state, and that it travels across the entire state. I mean, you may be able to say, well, Nebraska or something like that, but it's still nowhere near the caliber in sports across the board either. So it's just such a unique school, and it's hard for people to understand who's not from Arkansas to really understand the love and passion that Razorback fans have across the entire state. I mean, it's legendary. You can go, no matter where you go, you're going to see Razorback flags, you're going to see Razorback fans, you're going to see Razorback shirts, you're going to see it all. And when you're the only game in town, people are going to put all their effort into it, and they're also going to feel confident that, hey, we can compete for championships in every sport because we have the support, we have the facilities, we have the money, we have it all. We have all the things that you need. It's just a matter of getting the right coach in place to carry out a plan and execute it. You may have one with Eric Musselman. I know you got one with Dave Van Horn. You're hopeful that that's going to be Sam Pittman. Time will tell. It's a lot of unknown there. But you just feel confident when you have the right guy at the helm that's going to bring you championships.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, available in black cherry, strawberry, lemon lime, and mango.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas, 80 yards.
You know, we were having a good discussion in the first hour of the show, and we were talking about Arkansas as a fan base and as a school, and how Razorback fans are just so good at making sure that if they're successful at a particular sport, they will show up and support it. Obviously, some sports will get more support than others, just kind of based on, you know, where the interest level is at and how good they are. But Arkansas fans have always just been really good at that. And it's funny to me, too, because I wonder how unique that really is. Is it as unique as I believe it is? Is it as unique as what it looks like from other schools? Because, for instance, I like to bring up these examples, but, you know, like for at Alabama, Alabama football is king of the kings. It's creme de la creme over there. Everything is as good as it gets when it comes to football. And they have a huge fan base and a huge following, and everybody is all into it. But I feel like that if they got good at basketball or even at baseball, close to the same level that they were at, I think that there would be some support there, sure, but it still would not be to the same level or even anywhere close to what it is in football. And I feel like there's a lot of schools, specifically in the SEC, that are a lot more like that. I think LSU might be more like Arkansas, where if you're good at, especially the three major sports, there'll be a lot of support there. And I'm sure that I'm missing a few others, maybe a Texas A&M or something like that. But, you know, you've seen a place like Florida, for instance. Florida has done really well in all three major sports over the past 15 years. I mean, they've won a national championship in all three major sports over the past 15 years. But I don't see them supporting their basketball program or being as passionate about their basketball program now than what they were many years ago, or demanding that it be back to the national championship caliber level. I just don't see that. And so when I look at Arkansas and the program that they are at and the type of program that they are with the fans that always come out and support them, I'm just wondering if it's as unique as what it looks like to me.
I wonder, you mentioned LSU there because we brought them up in the first hour. Who's a bigger deal in the state of Louisiana, the Saints or the LSU Tigers?
Man, that's tough, honestly.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not there, but I'm going to tell you, you know, Arkansas is unique because it's one of a few states that doesn't have a pro team but has a major college program, and the Razorbacks are the pro program, as we've all been told and witnessed and enjoyed over our lifetimes. But I mean, even in a place, you know, Alabama doesn't have a pro team, but they split the state with Auburn. And, you know, there's other Division I programs there as well. But Alabama is the king, but they're close enough to Atlanta. People generally in the state of Alabama associate with Atlanta sports. I'm going to tell you, LSU's an interesting study because even though the Saints are there, even though they have NBA basketball in New Orleans as well, I'm telling you, LSU's as big a brand in that state as either one of those pro franchises.
Yeah, and would you be surprised, Tommy, if LSU ever won a championship in basketball? Would you be surprised?
I guess mildly. I mean, will there be another Shaquille O'Neal? Will there be another Pistol Pete Maravich? I don't know. I mean, it would not surprise me because we know I guess it would mildly surprise me that they were able to put that together, but we know the level of athleticism that comes out of the state of Louisiana. The NFL draft is just truth serum on that. Just it proves it every year.
Yeah. Well, and the main reason I'm asking that is because, of course, we're comparing it to Arkansas, which I agree with you on LSU, but with Arkansas and on all the things you just said, being the one show in town, the biggest supporter, and how you can go at all four corners of the state and see Razorback fans and all of that, does that make it to where Arkansas should be able to compete for championships in every sport? Does something that having a unique type of fan base and a unique type of program in general, is that enough or should it be enough to where Razorback fans reasonably can expect to compete for national championships in every sport? Is that enough?
I don't think so. I just think the state's population, I think Arkansas has underperformed, and I think we'd all agree over the last 10 to 15 years with this football program, really since McFadden left. I mean, you had a couple of years there in 10 and 11 where you competed at the highest level. But what you're talking about, I think what you're driving at is, can you consistently be relevant? You know, I think Arkansas's had it when the players cycled through at the right time in our state. It just takes so many great players to make a football program successful in this conference, in this division right now, in the state that things are in. And you've got to have the Tyler Wilsons, the Joe Adams, the Greggs, the Jerry's Wrights all come along at one time. You know, the great linemen. And that's been the issue. In basketball, you're able to pull 2, 3, 4 players out of this state in a year or two process or period and make it work. John, I just the numbers in this state right now make me wonder if you can realistically think you can be a top 3 SEC West program, knowing who you're up against. We're talking about Bama and LSU, A&M, Auburn. To be consistently there, boy, that's going to be, to me, with the demographics of this state, it makes it difficult.
Yeah, and I agree with you, too. But I just look at it, and I think that fan bases across the board in college sports especially, and in particular sports themselves, what can drive those programs to being successful is the fans' fire and expectation and how they demand excellence. I think that Alabama football, even though they've had their down years, what drove them to being to where they're at now, to what drove them to pay that much for Nick Saban when they hired him, what drove them to make a change from Mike Shula, is that they demanded excellence. They demanded to be a high-end program. And what drove them to that is that they would do whatever it took to get to that point. I'm not saying they would cheat.
Hiring Nick Saban was part of that.
Exactly. And so, and I think it could be the same way said for Razorback basketball, for instance. And I know that, you know, no one was just demanding Mike Anderson get fired. I think there may have been some. But it was a matter of, listen, this is what we've seen over the past 8 years was fine. And we were competitive. And we appreciated how we got brought to that next level. However, this isn't good enough. This is not what we demand. This is not what we should be. We need to be better than this. We need to be a program that's better than this. And the fan base's expectations and how they push for that excellence, in a lot of cases, puts the pressure on administration and on the school themselves to make that happen. And I think that that's also what drives a lot of these fan bases, because, listen, everybody can just sit there and demand all day long that they want championships, but not everybody can win championships. But I think when you continue to pressure and have the fans as fired up and as energized and as demanding as they can be, even though it can get frustrating at times and even though it can get a little out of hand at times, I think if you're able to do that as a football program, especially here at Arkansas, you can get back to that point because the fans put the pressure to where the decisions that will be made in a way to where they understand they have to get the program back on track. And again, you have to be able to temper it a little bit because it can get a little out of hand. But I believe that if you're able to push it enough, a place like Arkansas or a place like Arkansas basketball, football, baseball, whatever it is, can get to that point. It's based a lot on the fans' expectations.
Yeah, and not to say you can't have a repeat of 10-11 or get this thing back to where Nutt had it fairly consistently. Had a few ups and downs there, but he was fairly consistent about – he certainly wasn't winning two games in a year. You know, so, I mean, right now, when you're winning two games, you just want to get back to winning six or seven, and then we'll figure it out. But, yeah, I think it could certainly get back to there. You're just going to need a cycle of great in-state players.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to the phone lines. Terry is in Hackett. What's going on, Terry?
Hey, I agree with what Tommy's saying. I generally do. But the same aspect, like with Nutt and Felix Jones and Darren McFadden, had we had a Bobby Petrino or, you know, hopefully a Sam Pittman, if we had we got to have the players cycle through, but we need the coach too, and we'd never put that together. That's my belief of why we haven't hit the pinnacle of Arkansas football. Thank you, and I'll hang up and listen.
Well, thanks for the call, Terry. No, that's absolutely true. Listen, at a place like Arkansas, you have to get that, not just one once-in-a-generation type of class, but you need to get a couple of those classes strung together because, you know, we think back to the best years that Arkansas has had, Tommy, in the past 20 years, because I think that's a fair recent memory of people that where they understand where they were at. The best years Arkansas had, the 10-win seasons they had, were when they had some of the best recruiting classes ever. I mean, you think about in 2006 and 2007, you had Darren McFadden, once in a generation type of player, but you also added in the Felix Jones and the Peyton Hillis and the Marcus Monk and you guys that you also were able to develop, like a Jamal Anderson, a Sam Olajabutu, guys that just fit. And then you had the schedule set up perfectly for it. You had a coach or at least a coordinator in mind with Gus Malzahn that came in and made some changes and adjustments. Like you had it all come together. Same thing with Bobby Petrino and the successes he had in 2010 and 2011. What did you have? You had a great recruiting class, and I guess a couple of recruiting classes in this case that added in Ryan Mallett, Greg Childs, Joe Adams, Jarius Wright, DJ Williams, and Kobe Hamilton, and that's just on the offensive side. You also had some great offensive linemen in that mix too. You just have to have it all come together at once at a place like Arkansas, and unfortunately, the in-state talent, there's been some there, but man, if Sam Pittman, I think that you could really take that next step, and I'm sure he's hopeful for it, that you get that 1 year where in the state of Arkansas, you have a recruiting class that produces 4, 5, 6 big-time SEC-caliber players, and you're able to get all of them. I mean, it's easier said than done. I get it. But you got to have everything come together at the right time in football in order for Arkansas to be that caliber of a team.
Yeah, and you're obviously hoping that's what this staff – that's the thing I like about what Pittman's done. I think he's put the staff together that can recruit the players – to do it. They're going to have to have a little more national, a little more regional footprint, I think, in order to get it done over the short term. And when I say short term, I'm talking 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you at least got to be competitive. I don't know what the expectation is for Sam Pittman in the first 3 to 5 years. Like, is there an expectation of what he has to do? Like, I mean, is it simply saying, okay, well, he has to win 10 games within the next 5 years? Is that something that's an actual expectation? Is it just a matter of getting to bowl games every year? I mean, what is the expectation right now?
I'm sure he's expecting more than that because he's, what, 58 years old?
Yeah.
I mean,
no spring chicken.
How long does he want to wait around to have success? He's probably not making a 10-year plan here. You know, he'd like to have it done in 5 or less, and I think it can be done. That's why I say 3 to 5 gives you a chance to get your recruits in here. And I'm still of the belief, and as I said last week, I'm taking just a blind leap of faith that Sam Pittman and Brad Davis are going to fix the O-line problems and make the players they have now better. And then they're going to bring in better players. And that's going to fix a lot of the issues on offense. There is a huge mountain to climb on defense. I think they got the right guy in place to do it, but that's going to take a couple of years to get enough of the right players in here, get them developed. But I think they can just become better and be just quit being embarrassing. That's the problem the last 2 years. It's just been embarrassing what's happened with this football program. And I think they can solve a lot of those problems. It's going to be baby steps. None of us want to hear that. I don't like it. I wish they could win 8 or 9 next year. But we understand that recruiting's got to take place in order to do that.
Yeah, I know. You have to make that happen. You have to just give it time and let it go out. But I think Sam Pittman's got a good plan in place. I think that he's got the right things moving. It's just a matter now of executing it, and you can't execute it until you actually start playing games and start seeing that development. But Joe in Fayetteville actually texted in kind of an interesting question. He says, what was our best year for all sports across the board the last 20 years, where basketball, football, and baseball all did respectively well? That is a great question, and I was actually trying to think of that. Because, Tommy, baseball made it the College World Series in 2015, correct?
Yes, okay. 2015.
And in football that year, or at least in that 2014-2015 school year, Arkansas made the Texas Bowl and won that. That wasn't like the greatest thing ever, but still it was a 7-6 year. And I think that was the same year, too, when Bobby Portis, Michael Qualls, and all them made the tournament, right, and won a game.
I believe that's right. I'm getting my media guide out for basketball right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like just a great year all around, but that's definitely a solid one. I know it's a solid year. I'm trying to think of any other years where, because in 2009 it definitely wasn't. 2009 your football team was 7-5. That year you went 5-7 in football. Your baseball team went to the College World Series and it was really good, but basketball wasn't that good either. Huh.
Yeah, 2010-11 for basketball, you were tied for third in the West, but had a below 500 SEC record. 2011-12, you were 18-14 on the year and 6-10 in SEC play. That was Mike Anderson's first year. So,
Yeah. Yeah, it hasn't been very kind as far as getting all the sports together that have been really good. Even in 06, I know that your football and basketball teams were pretty good. Obviously, with the basketball team making it with Ronnie Brewer in that NCAA tournament. So
2006-07, you put those years together, which I think that's the way you'd want to look at it. 21-14 for the basketball team, tied for third in the West, made the NCAA first round.
Yeah.
Lost to Southern Cal that year.
That's right. And O.J. Mayo, remember that game. Stan Heath's last year. Huh. Well, and how did baseball do, though, that year, though? Because that was, I'm sure they were good.
Get the other media guide out.
You just got to keep going through the media guides here. But I think what this is showing, though, that over the past 20 years especially, you've really not had a time where everything was just all in place, like where everything was working out perfectly. In fact, Tommy, I like to say this to friends of mine, too, but the moment that I felt like I was in my peak Razorback fandom as far as confidence across the board was actually at that Arkansas-Michigan basketball game, because that was Mike Anderson's first year there, and everyone was excited about Mike Anderson getting the basketball team back on track. Bobby Petrino was just coming off 11-2 season. Baseball had just, I guess that year, they were about to make the College World Series. They were going to be making it in 2012. So they were a really good baseball team. So that moment, at least, was the best I ever felt. But as far as the games themselves, man, that's a tough one.
So I don't have – someone took the baseball media guide, so I can't look that up for you.
What a bunch of jerks.
Yeah, I know it was in here. Okay. I don't know where it went.
So. Well, don't worry. We'll get Hog Stats on that on Twitter. He's always big on that type of thing. So, yeah, we'll get Hog Stats on that,
I don't know if there's been a year where all three lined up for just great stuff, you know.
No. No.
You know, in 95, the football team went to the SEC championship game, got beat by Florida, played the Carquest Bowl that year and lost. But the 95 basketball team was also pretty good, too, earlier in that year. You know, 96 wasn't bad either, went to the Sweet 16. I couldn't tell you what happened in baseball that year.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, we'll get Hog Stats on it. We'll start doing our research and we'll get back to you. That's a great question, Joe and Fayetteville. That's a fascinating one.
That'd be more than the 15 years they put in their question.
Yeah, that's true, too. It's a Toyota Tuesday here on the Morning Rush. Be sure to check out all new 2020 Toyota vehicles at your local Arkansas Toyota dealer, including the Highlander with plenty of room up to 8 people, the stylish new Corolla, the work-ready family tough Tundra, and the go-anywhere 4Runner. Toyota, let's go places. Bill in Fayetteville also texted in. Tommy says, why would you think Pittman would get 3 to 5 years when the last coach only got 1.5 years?
Because I don't think Pittman's going 2-10.
I'm glad because you said the exact same answer I was going to give. It's like, well, 2-10 is why.
If Sam Pittman goes 2-10 back-to-back years and embarrasses the entire state and the program, he won't be here for a third year either. And that's the sad reality is you got to have a coach that, you know, Chad Morris embarrassed all of us as Arkansans. Mm-hmm. It's an embarrassment. It was an embarrassment what happened. I'm just of the belief that's not going to happen. And, you know, it's not Kool-Aid drinking. It's just I think Sam Pittman's a much better football coach. So,
well, yeah, and I don't think Sam Pittman's just going to have the nonsense, man. Like, you know, not only the special teams gaffes of, you know, the fake fair catch and the fake punt stuff and just all that, but then adding into the mix of the club dub and, you know, vanilla by design and, you know, we got better today, and it's great. Like, just all that stuff that was just nonsense, man. I don't think Sam Pittman's going to be that way. Sam Pittman seems like a guy that just he. I don't know if he'll be a great coach, but I do know that you at least have a team that's playing for him and playing hard, and Chad Morris couldn't even get that.
And the difference is because Chad Morris repeatedly said, we don't have our players in here yet.
Yeah.
How do you think that went over in the locker room with the existing players? You think those players wanted to run through a wall for Chad Morris?
No.
After you say, well, I don't have our players in here yet.
Yeah.
And Sam Pittman, one of the first things he said, we're proud of what we have. We got to build upon it and go recruit more players. But I'm proud of the players we have. Whether he meant it or not, he said it. And those players from the very get-go, are bought into Sam Pittman because he's shown them love and respect. And I don't think they were getting a lot of that out of Chad Morris.
No. I mean, there was...
I think Chad Morris thought he had 5 years regardless of the results.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Tommy, and it may be coming off as really mean, but I am sitting here struggling trying to find a redeeming quality, trying to find something that I can look back on and say, well, this was good.
They recruited well. They did bring in some players, and that is one thing you can say about what Morris did. Now, it kinda, the second class came unraveled, you know, in this last year because he left, but they were good recruiters for the most part. That'd be the only redeeming thing you could say.
Oh, man. Yeah, recruiting players, and you couldn't do anything with them. Now, I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah. You know, that's half the battle. But they won that part of the battle comparative to Arkansas standards. Still finished below where you'd like to finish in the SEC, but raised Arkansas's national level, if you will, and the level of talent they brought in. I mean, you look at some of the players that have been brought in the last 2 to 3 classes, and I think it's, you know, That you're looking for one silver lining in a dark cloud of the Chad Morris era. That'd be the only thing I could give you.
Yeah, and you know, I know that some of the players that are going to be currently on the roster that are going to be guys that Chad Morris brought in are going to be pivotal. You know, guys like Rakeem Boyd, Trey Knox, Traylon Burks. I mean, those are guys that he obviously brought in, but. You know, you're just hoping for an overhaul of culture change, man. You're just hoping for an overhaul of everything going the different direction and that these players, even though they weren't recruited by Sam Pittman and the staff, they at least be able to buy in and play for Sam Pittman and this staff. That alone is going to make this team better.
I think that culture change has already begun.
I hope so.
From all indications, I think I'll be really interested to see how this team maybe just responds or acts differently, John, during spring drills, during spring practice.
Yeah. And I just hope that I don't never hear the words club dub or vanilla by design or any of that nonsense ever again in my life.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, gluten-free with no artificial flavors.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs!
Arkansas got a nice victory over TCU in basketball without Isaiah Joe on Saturday. Now they got to move back into conference play as they take on South Carolina tomorrow night at 7:30 in Bud Walton Arena. And to join us to talk a little more about it, let's welcome in Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Good morning, Tom. How you doing, man?
I'm doing quite well. Happy to be on here with y'all.
Well, it's always good to have you on. And actually, I want to start right there with just the basketball game in general against TCU. To me, I know Eric Musselman said it was one of the best games, if not the best game, that his team has played all season long. But the fact that they were able to do that at home without the services of IJ Ajoh, I mean, those are just type of big type of plays and big type of games that you want to see from this Arkansas team.
It really was. And the efficiency on both ends was really keen. When you go into that game and you know that you don't have your guy Joe, I would never argue that they were better without him, but I do think they were very, very focused and had a plan, which was to attack. And I thought Jalen Harris and Mason Jones both did a great job driving. And then Desi Sills, who had a huge game with 3-for-3, 3-point shooting. They don't win the game without his production. He has a way, and I always turn to the guy sitting next to me, either Bob or Scotty Bordelon, and I tell him, he is so amazing at finishing in traffic. And he's always going to get hit, and he always hits the floor hard, but he has a way to double pump or scoop or come up on the other side and score in transition. And so it was a huge, kind of a must-win game. Eric Musselman called it a must-win game. Good for your RPI because TCU had just beaten Texas Tech, and good to know that you can be without a key cog and have that type of performance. And that might be the same against South Carolina because he's probably iffy at this point.
You know, Isaiah Joe with the knee inflammation, he's had a couple of games in the last 10 days or week, but leading up to this game where he just didn't seem to be at his A game. Do you think this maybe explains since the Ole Miss game why he hadn't been firing on all cylinders, so to speak?
I do think that played a role in it because when your knees ailing you, you're not able to push off as strong, and he didn't have a shot. I mean, I detailed it today. I think it was 8 of 30 3-point range, and which was a little bit better than his overall shooting during that span. So you hope that he's able to rest it and come back and just have confidence in his lift and you know in cutting and all that kind of stuff. But I've always maintained that, you know, their 3-point shooting has been good in spurts, but they're a much better team when they drive it hard and when Harris gets to the basket because he draws help and that opens up guys. I mean, think of the Cheney dunks and the Sills conversions on times when Jalen Harris is driven in. And then also Mason Jones has been such a good foul shooter that when you drive it frequently, you're going to pick up a lot of those. And he did that in the second half against TCU. So it's a big challenge against South Carolina. They've been playing good ball lately. They beat Kentucky at home. They have a good backcourt, and so a really nice test for this team.
Yeah, that was actually going to lead to my next question, Tom, of just the rest of the SEC slate. Arkansas has 12 games left, and just looking ahead to the schedule, they got to take care of business against South Carolina. But I just don't see very many games at Arkansas. I just don't see them losing for sure, like just chalking them up as L's. They're going to be competitive no matter what. But I'm not saying they'll go undefeated. And I'm just saying that they match up, as far as that goes, pretty well with a lot of the teams remaining on the schedule. What's a realistic expectation for the final 12 games of the season for this team?
Well, I mean, the way they do prep, it gives them a chance every time out. I mean, even like against the Mississippi State game, I felt like that was not a great matchup. But they rebounded okay in the first half, and you know they didn't shoot it particularly well. But they're in the game, and the numbers sometimes don't seem to compute to how close they play these games when you look at the rebounding disadvantages and that kind of thing. And they didn't shoot their free throws particularly well down there. Look, when LSU comes up here, when Mississippi State comes in, when they go to A&M, those are all games where you get really bashed on the board. So they're going to have to shoot well to win those. They go to Alabama here on Saturday, and I'm covering that one, which Alabama leads the conference in three-pointers. And that's how, you know, they're very dangerous there. So that's, to me, that's a dangerous game. So I think a lot of them are going to be tight. I don't see anything being a blowout. Even Georgia, you know, Ole Miss went in there and won at Georgia. Well, they finish up at Georgia. Who knows where both teams are going to be at that point. So I just think if they can stay on projection that they're going to be an NCAA tournament team, you just don't want to lose any more at home. And if they can do that, they have a chance to maybe sweep Missouri this year, who seems to be struggling. So maybe get one or two road wins, then they'll be in fine shape.
Let's talk about South Carolina, 11-8, coming in here with a 3-3 conference record. Winners of three of their last four, including a win over Kentucky back on the 15th of January, a road win at Texas A&M, and they beat Vanderbilt, who is struggling in their three of their last four. What kind of game against a always tough Frank Martin team do you think Arkansas will have?
Yeah, they've got to stay aggressive. They got to keep driving and kicking and drawing fouls. Here's a stat that came up yesterday. South Carolina ranks at the very bottom in the country in terms of the amount of free throws their opponents shoot. And Arkansas did a good job of that against TCU. So at home, drive in there, force some contact, get to the line is going to be key. Just maintain. Hold your own on the boards the best you can. We haven't even talked about him yet, but Jimmy Witt, such an X factor, whose defense right now, I mean, he really shut down Desmond Bain, TCU. So I expect to see him on South Carolina's A.J. Lawson, who's the team's leading scorer at 13.7 points a game. But this Cuisinart guy who hit the bank three-pointer that beat Kentucky, he's kind of a thick, powerful guard who can rebound. And so he averages he averages 2.9 a game, but he's going to be tough to hold on to. So I'd like to see Sills maintain his recent shooting, and I think that gives him a chance. And then, of course, Jalen Harris, his play lately, his assist to turnover has been really good in recent games, and I think he's growing in confidence as this moves along. So, again, a tough game. South Carolina hadn't been getting great production out of Mike Kotar lately, and Frank called him out. You'll read that in the paper tomorrow.
Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Always appreciate it, Tom, man. Enjoy the game. We'll catch up with you on Thursday, all right?
Sounds outstanding. See y'all.
All right, appreciate it. That was Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. He'll be joining us again around the same time on Thursday, Tommy.
All right, looking forward to having Tom join us then. And we got another hour coming up here on the Morning Rush.
Yeah, looking forward to that as well, because we got to get into our dubs and scrubs of who we think gets the dub and the scrub, as well as we'll get to phone calls and text messages from all of you coming up in the third hour of the Morning Rush. Stay with us, folks. More of that coming up next.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Follow the show on Twitter at HitThatLineAR.
It's been a fun-filled show. We just got an hour left. We're going to continue our discussions that we've been having this morning about Razorback basketball, some football stuff, too. Also, your phone calls and text messages, 877-377-6963. And since it's 8 o'clock on a Tuesday, we got to get into our scrubs and dubs here on the Morning Rush.
Some people were born to get dubs.
I'm hollering loud because I can back up every word. And I'll whoop any man in the world. And I want everybody out there on TV to know it. I am the greatest.
Others were born to be scrubs.
These guys, I don't know if we're going to be able to beat anybody this year.
Don't listen to him, Hank. He's a loser.
Good thing we get to decide who gets dubs and who's the scrubs on the Morning Rush.
All right, Scrubs and Dubs brought to you by Sassy's up in Fayetteville. They have two locations conveniently located close to campus off of College and off of Weddington. You hear me talk about it all the time, but I'm telling you, it's such an awesome atmosphere. One of the things that I think is really underrated in a restaurant is we sit here and we can talk about the food all day long, but the food is amazing. But what they have at Sassy's, they have excellent service. And Tommy, I know you know just as well as anybody, bad service can make or break a restaurant.
Yep, it's the number one thing. Food can be okay. Service bad, going out of business sale.
Yeah, exactly right. And so
service great, food okay, you'll be there a while.
Oh, yeah, every single time. And that's what Sassy's has. It's not only do they have great food, but they have great service. Every single time I have been there, I have never had to wait very long to get seated. I've never had to wait very long to have my food. It's always been fantastic. And I think that that's something that people can really appreciate. It needs to be talked about more. And that's another reason why I love Sassy's. They have great barbecue nachos. They have great service. They have a full bar, plenty of TVs to watch the games. And if you're going to be heading up to the Razorback game against South Carolina tomorrow, head over to Sassy's beforehand and eat some dinner. Again, two locations in Fayetteville off of College and off of Weddington. I'll go ahead and kick it off with my dub. I'm going to start on a positive note. And I want to give a dub out to Hogstats. Now, if you don't follow Hogstats on Twitter, you need to. He does a great job, and I know the guy personally. He is somebody that puts in a lot of hard work. He has an entire database of stuff that it's mind-blowing, the type of stuff that he comes up with. And it's simple. You just follow him at Hogstats on Twitter. But Tommy, you know, yesterday we were having the discussion on the show about Jimmy Witt. Mm-hmm. And we were saying, all right, well, Jimmy Witt, you know, hey, man, he's averaging 15 points a game, but he's doing it without hitting a three. You know, who was the last player to do that? When was the last time? And well, you know, that was just kind of a conversation we had. Well, not long after the show ended yesterday, I get a tweet from Hogstats where he says, per Sports Ref, Jimmy Witt is just the ninth guard and the only one from a power conference since 1992-1993 to average 15-plus points per game in a season without making a three-pointer. And he sends me the image of who the players are. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, I didn't even inquire for Hogstats to do that, but he was listening to the show. He put it together. He put out the stat, and it's pretty incredible that what he put out. Apparently, there's a guy who played for Central Connecticut State, Tommy, in 1992-1993 named Damian Johnson, who scored 605 points and averaged 23 points a game as a guard, but never scored on a three-pointer. So my dub goes to Hogstats, the fact that he just went to that stat, found that stat, and gave it to me literally minutes after the show ended. That just shows you how cool it is and how great he is with the stats. So my dub has to go to Hogstats. Shout out to you, man, and I appreciate that because I was fascinated by
that's
it.
That's big time, big time. I'd love to just have the computer skills to be able to know how to crank out the data like that. That's pretty cool right there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what type of, like, does he have, like, a government type of computer system there where he's got, like, servers and things, like, all over his apartment or whatnot? I don't know exactly how he does it, but, man, he is on the nose when it comes to stats. So if you ever have
a question, how much RAM you got in that thing, you know?
Yeah, like, how many computers are you running, my man? Like, so if you ever have any questions about stats or random stats, no matter how random it is, ask Hogstats when it comes to Razorback basketball, because odds are he's got something on him. So kudos to you, Hogstats. Appreciate the help out on that stat.
Just think about, though, that stat you're referencing from yesterday's show. A guard averaging 15 a game without a three-pointer. That's almost impossible, right?
Yeah.
In today's game, particularly.
Yeah. Oh, and that's why I was when he sent me the numbers. I mean, you're Tommy, this is some of the people, or at least this is some of the schools that it happened at. Central Connecticut State, Missouri, Kansas City, Manhattan, Jacksonville State, American, Coppin State. I mean, even if somebody did get that, no one was going to know about them just because they were playing at smaller schools. Yeah. But I'm also going to say, Tommy, if this happens, it'll be the first time since 2005 that you've had a guard do that in college basketball. So it's not only just hasn't happened very often, it hasn't happened in a very long time, over 15 years. Yeah. Jimmy Witt could be the guy, and I could be wrong about this, Tommy, but unless it's just a final heave buzzer beater, I don't think Jimmy Witt's going to be making any threes this year.
So he had 20 on Saturday, we know, against TCU. Do you have a season stat line up in front of you? Where is he at? I mean, I know he's at 15. Give me a stat line for the year if you have it right there in front of you.
Are you talking about for Jimmy?
Yeah.
On what particular stat?
Well, I mean, scoring and rebounds, I guess, is where I want to.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, for this year, obviously, he's averaging 15.3 points a game. Yeah, is where what he's
set right on that line right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's only attempted 2 3-pointers. Both of them were heaves. And missed both of them because, like I said, they were right before halftime. So that's what he's sitting at right now. But, I mean, it's kind of cool to see that in this day and age, too, Tommy, because it's almost, I'm not saying that nobody knows, he can't get shut down defensively, but it's almost like people don't know how to handle him because they're like, wait a minute, who's this guard out here just dribbling the ball around and going inside and shooting inside jumpers? Who is this? Why? Mm-hmm. Why are you not going out to the three-point land? But that's his game. That's what he does really well, and I hope he continues to do it because, Tommy, Arkansas's had some good players. Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe get a lot of the praise, but without Jimmy Witt Jr. on this team, you are nowhere near the team you are right now without the success he's having.
Yeah, and you know, when I'm looking at my dubs for the week, I kind of look – slip over to his teammate and to the coach. I had two of them this week. Desi Seals, 18 points in 34 minutes in the game against TCU. Stepped up in a big way when you obviously didn't have Isaiah Joe and made the difference in the game, I thought. I mean, we've kind of counted on Jimmy Witt to get 15 to 20 points a game. That's what's been happening as of late. Mason Jones, you can't win without him getting 20. We've seen that, you know, time and time again. I thought Desi Seals should get a dub for the way he played in the absence and came off the bench in the absence of Isaiah Cho. Also one to Eric Musselman, who's a kind of low-hanging fruit, if you will, but this one's for a different reason when it comes to giving him the dub this week. We've got the video on our show post for today, but He was walking back from the Paul Feinbaum interview yesterday, saw some guys there on campus playing some pickup hoops, and just decided to join in for a few minutes. Now, how cool would that be? First of all, that he's just becoming a kind of a man of the people, if you will, doing things like this. Now, with today's social media, you can show and exhibit these kind of things. But how cool would that be if your student there on campus just playing some two-on-two, and here comes the head hog in to hey, can I slide in here a minute? I mean, what other coach would do something like that?
Not many. Not many who could be even physically capable of doing it.
You know, Mike Anderson was very physically capable. That just wasn't his M.O. Yeah. I just like the way Musselman has said, I'm just going to be a man of the people here. And I think that's what he's becoming pretty quickly.
Yeah. And luckily for him, the success and winnings come along with it, too, because usually if you see coaches trying to be the man of the people, it's mainly because they try to get him on his side, because if things go sour, they still want to have some allies in their corner, you know? They want to have somebody that'll still be there with them. But that's just who he is. I mean, he's done that since day one. And I couldn't imagine when I watched that video, I was like, what would I do if I was a student at the U of A and I'm playing pickup basketball with my buddies outside, and then up comes walking up Eric Musselman and says, hey, can I get in on your game? Like, I would immediately stop and be like,
well, yeah, you can, first of all.
Yeah, like that. But also, I'd like almost be skeptical and be like, okay, what is this? What are you going to do to us? Like, is there some sort of like trap here, or is it a test? Like, what is this? So, because it's just so rare. But yeah, seeing that, man, it again, those are the things that makes it so easy to root for Eric Musselman, and why I continue to hope that he does it really well at Arkansas, because man, he is just the whole package. Like, Tommy, you talked about having success in year one. It's hard to remember someone who's triggered so much excitement in year one, but and a lot of it not only just has to do with the wins and losses, but it's for stuff like this. You know, when he does that, when he goes out and makes these videos, and he goes out in the community, goes to sorority and fraternity houses on the U of A campus, going inside and trying to get people to come to games. I mean, it's just the whole package, man. He is just – he's doing everything right. He's hitting on all cylinders. I know Razorback fans love him for it. But, yeah, that was a great dub too. I also want to give a dub real quick, and, again, this one's an easy one, but – I want to give a dub to everyone that's been out there, especially celebrities and people who have played in the NBA and sharing some of their cool stories about Kobe Bryant. It's one thing to come out on social media and say, you know, oh, I'm sad to see Kobe Bryant pass, because everybody's mourning that. Everyone's sad to see Kobe Bryant in the way he's tragically killed with his daughter. And it's awful. It's absolutely awful. But it's really cool when you hear the stories that people have, their own personal stories about it. And to hear ones from not only as coaches, you know, they heard the one from Eric Musselman earlier when we played that audio. We've heard it from ESPN analyst and guys like Joe Breen, who gave his story, which was fantastic. I mean, there's just – I love hearing those things. I love hearing the stories, and it just continues to showcase just the type of person and who Kobe Bryant was. So that's another dub I wanted to throw in there as well, Tommy.
Yeah, that's a good one.
The cool ones and the cool stories to hear from it all.
I'm glad you mentioned Musselman. Maybe we'll get back to that sometime this hour. We played it in the first hour of the show, about 3 minutes of just – you know, sharing stories of working in the Laker organization when he was the D-League coach, and then also from his time as a head coach in the NBA playing against Kobe. I thought his stories and just some of the personal experience he had were very intriguing, and glad he shared that yesterday in his press conference. If you want to see the whole thing, you can go to hitthatline.com and watch yesterday's press conference with Eric Musselman.
Yeah, just an awesome story from him as well. All right, let's move on to scrubs. I got a couple of these too, but the first one I want to do, Tommy, my scrub goes to Taj Boyd, which is kind of random. I mean, I know, but Taj Boyd, of course, was a former quarterback for Clemson. He was the quarterback under Chad Morris when Morris was the offensive coordinator over there at Clemson. And I remember that Taj Boyd came on, I believe it was halftime, just about a year or so ago, and was talking about Chad Morris and just went on and on and on about how he was going to be incredible. He's going to be great. And, you know, I expect that from former players when they talk about coaches that they like. They say those things because they you know, they want to show respect and they want to support him and all that. I get it. But then yesterday, Taj Boyd is out on Twitter, and he's being asked about, you know, different quarterbacks and what he thinks about it. Well, he comes out already, even knowing that because of Chad Morris being the – he says because of Chad Morris being the offensive coordinator now at Auburn, Bo Nix is going to throw for 3,800 yards and 35 touchdowns this season. because of Chad Morris.
Yeah, I saw that.
Being the offensive coordinator. Yeah. Do you feel like that could happen?
3,500 yards?
3,800
yards.
35 touchdowns. No, with Chad Morris as your OC.
No, not going to happen.
I mean, Tommy, I don't want to wish ill will upon Chad Morris, but you got to admit, it would be kind of funny if Auburn's, like, quarterback situation with Bo Nix would just really take a turn for the worst this upcoming season, like, really regress. Again, I know that maybe that's a little harsh, but I just think it would be really funny if that ended up happening and seeing that. But anyways, I had to give Taj Boyd my scrub for just at least, listen, you don't have to sit down here and say that, you know, he's going to be trash or anything like that. But, man, to put out the expectation and thinking that that's going to happen with Chad Morris as OC over at Auburn, it seems just a little too far-fetched for my taste. So that's my scrub today.
Yeah. Hey, you know, it's hard to have a scrub or a lot to complain about. I know tomorrow's Watch Your Beef Wednesday when you're and you're watching all the coverage of Kobe and you just feel for the family. I think most of the coverage has been good. But I go back to something you said yesterday and to read another tweet from, I guess it was the undersheriff there in the county. And, you know, how he was heartbroken that the family found out through media reports. We spoke on that yesterday. Now I saw another one late last night that they've basically had to enforce that if you're caught at that crash scene, it's going to be you're going to be arrested and it's going to be a misdemeanor charge for being on that scene because people are trying to come there and get news stories and they're trying to do their NTSB investigation and all of this. And it's just such a sad story. I mean, I guess it's a scrub for me this week because I'm kind of just a student of how people have reacted to this right now. And depending on what era they've come from, because what I think we found out is Kobe was a lot more appreciated than we all really realized. And maybe in some ways closer to Jordan and his greatness than we realized. And I guess it's a scrub for me that it took his death maybe for a lot of people who probably fit in a category like me, John, not huge NBA fans, watched a lot of playoff games, but because of where we live and because of the SEC sports that we're plugged into, I'm not a big regular season guy, but he transcended all of that. So I guess I'm like everybody else. I'm a little bit down, a little bit bummed just because of all this, because did I have a personal relationship with him? No. Did I watch all of his games? Am I a big Lakers fan? No. But I just find it sad, the cloud that's hanging over the sporting world right now. So I guess that's as close as I've got. It's hard for me to come on and complain about a lot of stuff when, you know, wives lost husbands, families lost daughters and sons, one family just basically wiped out. I mean, that to me is just kind of my scrub this week is just the fact that, that's the story in sports.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is, and that's unfortunate that's the case. I'm curious, though, Tommy, because, again, you're just a little older than me, but what was the first major celebrity death that you remember well? Like, what was the one that was really big news that you remember well?
Well, let me think on that for a minute.
Okay, well, I'll go ahead and give you mine. While you're thinking about that, to me, when I was a kid, it was when Princess Diana died.
Yeah.
And when Princess Diana died, I think it was in 1997, and I was only 9 years old. But the thing is like I didn't know why. I just remember that it was a huge deal, and I remember the coverage of it and how on television all the time. That's where you heard about it first. That's where everyone saw it. And, you know, and there's been other deaths that have happened since. But then I refer to it back to how it's now handled this day and age and where a major celebrity passes, especially in a tragic way like that. I mean, you know, before it was just television coverage and it was okay. It was fine. And that was just because usually by that point, the family was notified. They had the investigation. They had it all their ducks in a row. But now that everything's so instant, I just don't see it ever going back to a time where it'll be handled the correct way of letting people that need to know first before the public knows. It's just never going to be that way. But that's one of the things I remember is just the nonstop coverage of Princess Diana.
I guess the biggest celebrity death in my lifetime, I don't really remember this because I was too young, would be Elvis. But I remember specifically, John, sitting in fourth grade, and they came in and they told us about the space shuttle crashing and the explosion. And I was in fourth grade, and the first one. And they've, you know, I've had two space shuttle disasters. But and I guess when you're a grade school kid, and particularly in that day and age, you know, astronauts, I guess to us as kids, were celebrities, and we'd studied about that. And I guess that when I just kind of think back through it at a young age, what settled into me, and I even knew what a celebrity was back in, you know, the early 80s. But, you know, that was one of the, I guess, when I was in fourth grade. And I remember that still to this day. So I guess if I had to answer it, it'd be, I guess, that. And the just, you know, having a lot of questions about death, you know, at that point.
Yeah, because and also, Tom, if you remember, you know, some of the most iconic deaths, if you think about the JFK assassination, one of the things you think about is Walter Cronkite coming on the television and telling people about it. That's the way it was handled then, and that's what's going to be iconic and about that moment and how people found out. I was wondering in 50 years if people ever remember back to Kobe when his passing happened, for instance, is people just going to remember a TMZ report? Is that what's going to be remembered? Because that was the first thing that came out. So it's just crazy how things have changed, and it's unfortunate the way that news is delivered, especially when it comes to stuff like that. But unfortunately, it's just the way it is.
I remember in that day and time, they had to bring a TV into the room. Because, I mean, now every classroom's got a TV or a projector screen or something.
Or people have iPads that they just turn on. And
wasn't the case then. So.
Yeah, a lot of different times. But, yeah, it's just something you'll always remember for the rest of your life of where you were and how you heard about it. And, again, I just don't think, unfortunately, it's going to change in media of how we get our news, especially when it's something as tragic as Kobe Bryant's passing.
Yeah. Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.